Pints in the Corner is a music history podcast about the Channel Club in Boston, Mass. Dinky Dawson and Tony Rain are your hosts. They interview channel performers and workers, bringing out stories and memories of the great music and events that came through this iconic South Boston venue. Welcome to Two Pints in the Corner with Tony Rain and Dinky Dawson. Tony is still recovering. In the meantime, I've got Sean McNally, who's been wonderful with me on these. Today, we're going to go and talk to one gentleman who really worked hard in the club, Domingo, and Domingo Berries. And welcome to Two Pints in the Corner, Domingo. How are you, laddie?
I'm good. Interestingly, as you know, lifetime sometimes goes full circle. I am actually... I moved in a little while ago with my dad in his art studio, so I am in the same loft that I was in when I walked over to get a job in the channel.
Oh,
so I look out the window and I can see the old spot.
Amazing. It's soon going to be Gillette, that. They're building an office there in that area.
Gillette, Padre Gamble and Gillette, right down the street, the old shaving company there in South Boston.
Yeah. So Sean's with us, and it's time to have some fun with Domingo, because Domingo was a complete cork there at the channel. He did, he came in for security. Well, you tell the story, Domingo. I think that's the best is for you to tell him what happened here.
Actually, the best way, Domingo, if you don't mind, how you get the job in the first place, how you even get in there. That was a great story you told me that night. So let's go.
So like I was telling you, I was here, in this artist co-op with my dad. I just moved in here from Canada. I'm from here, but I went up there to do high school and bang around there for a bit. Came down, moved in with my dad, and he was basically, you're 18 or 20 or whatever. I was a puppy, whatever I was. Get a job, kid. So I left. It was a hot, I think it was August or it was summer. And I was walking across the parking lot and the channel was there. And they had one of those old timey cigarette machines in the lobby, like a foosball handle.
Yeah.
And I was a smoker back then. And one of other dumb decisions that I made. But anyway, so I went in to buy some cigarettes, and there was a sign that said, now hiring. And here comes Tony Rain. He's got this spiky blonde hair and a little bit of a mullet going on. I said, excuse me, are you hiring? And he just looks over and goes, you like rock and roll? I said, I do like rock and roll. He goes, can you start Tuesday? I said, I can't start Tuesday. So I walked home, and I think my dad thought it was hot out, and I had given up, and I was like, no, I just got a job. I'm going to take a nap. That's how it all started. And the rest, as they say, is history.
That's awesome.
There
wasn't very much of a vetting process. I remember the same thing. I walked in there when I got hired. I went in one night, one afternoon. I said, hey, you guys hiring for security? It's like, yeah, you want to work the door tomorrow night? I'm like, sure.
Yeah.
So that's an awesome story, though. I mean, you go to buy a pack of butts, and your dad's on you to find a job, and you come across the street 5 minutes later, you got both.
Yeah, man. And I was there for years. I mean, and it's also, I think for all of us, I would imagine. I mean, this is a huge chunk of sort of a magical memory time, albeit, some of the memories a little foggy,
fuzzy.
But that was 40 years ago. So
it was 86. It was on 86 when you did that, right?
Okay.
Was it 1986 when you did this?
Let's see, 55, 75.
You just said 40 years. That's 86.
Oh, no, then let's see. I'm 60 now, so... I was born in 65, 75, 85. Yeah, I guess maybe I was 21, 2021. Wow.
85.
Yep. And I also remember, soon after getting the gig, and I was doing security at first, but Tony also wanted me to advertise, and he had this white like old, probably as old as I was, probably a 65 or something, an old white Vespa, I think a 125 or a 150. And he gave me little flyers and told me to drive around and hand them out. And like, 21-year-old to get a job in a rock club and give it a motorcycle. I was like, all right. And then he was like, keep it in your loft, because I had we have an old freight elevator.
Keep it in your
loft. I just like rolled it in, and my dad is like, God, do you have like a rabbit foot up your butt?
Pretty awesome. So,
yeah, it was a nice introduction for sure. And then I, you know, I did security for a while, and then and I remember I bar backed.
I remember one thing about you and the bar back that blew me away is one night there was an Irish rental in there, and they drank all the Guinness. The next thing I know is that you're on your way into town to one of our local friends' pubs just to get some kegs of Guinness for the. I said to myself,
"JJ Foley's is
a yeah, it was Foley's." Yeah. That was
right. Yeah. doing the runner thing, and I remember that when I was bar backing, you know, and it's amazing how this sort of springboarded so many people's careers and lives or changed the trajectory. And Bobby Longo was like the runner.
Oh yeah.
For the dressing rooms.
Yeah.
So he'd do like all the riders and stuff and help out. And then he started doing the load in and the load out and then the tech. And now, you know, he's with Justin Timberlake. So it's pretty awesome.
He's doing well. Yeah,
did you first start as security, Domingo? What, did Tony like even tell you what you were going to do when they said you're hired? Or was it just
no,
like...
I think he probably like, again, I was walking around. I was planning to go downtown and just, I don't know, work in a shoe store. I didn't know what I was going to do. So I didn't know how to do anything, you know.
Yeah.
I could pick people up and throw them out, I guess. But I didn't know how to bartend, and I couldn't bartend.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah.
Until I bar backed, I couldn't bartend, and I you know, ideally, I'd like to. I wanted to get behind the stick, so to speak.
Bartend.
So I did security for a while, and I don't know who was bar backing, but eventually, I lugged enough ice and cut enough limes that, you know, some whatever Sunday afternoon new music they threw me on to see how I do. And then I got another shift, and eventually I got up to I think I told you, like, I remember bartending, and you know, I don't know how long I've been there, but I had my shot, and then of course Roy Orbison gets on stage, and I ignored everybody and stood on a milk crate for like half an hour. I was so mesmerized. It was like I don't, you know.
Yeah, that show was amazing.
Yeah,
I don't think,
and myself included, but I don't think many of us that were there in that, you know, in that little piece of time where all this kind of went down, that we were living in a part of like rock history, but we were so close to it. I knew it was awesome and it was great, but looking back on it now, I was like,
right,
that was just amazing. It was incredible.
Yeah, I think who was it we had on a couple weeks ago, Dinky? Someone was saying it was like working at Disneyland. It was Tom Hammer. Somebody had it on, and they're saying, you know what? That, or maybe it was Warren, but it really described it. We were just kids. We all having fun. We're all like, you know, late teens, early 20s. You know, the place is jumping. There's amazing music. You've got great friends you're working with. The crowds are coming in. It was just so fun. That was just like your life back then. You know, like, we took it for granted for sure. You know,
yeah.
It's like
looking
back now, it's, man, I wish I had better kept more memories or, you know, taken more time to think about what we were actually experiencing. Because like you say, when you're there, you're just there. You're working, and it's like, yeah, you're trying to sneak a peek here and there. And, you know, when it's Roy Orbison, we're speaking more than a peek. We're watching, like, you know, solid 5 minutes. So you couldn't even take your eyes off. It was incredible.
Yeah. So after there, you were doing the bartending well. You also learned how to do mixed drinks. And from what I hear, you've made mixology is one of your traits these days that you make.
I did, yeah. I actually, I got to, I went from making drinks at the channel to designing cocktail programs kind of around the world for Jean-Georges, who's a pretty well-known chef.
Yeah.
I started off with, I worked a couple a couple of places, opened a couple of hotels, and I started working for him. And I got to, I mean, if this is the toot your own horn part, when I was at Les Vig, I got to go, I got to go and do a photo shoot and be in Vogue magazine. That was fun. And then I got top 10 most inspired bartenders for Bombay Sapphire, which got me into GQ, which was fun. I carried that around in my leather bag for a while. Drop it on the bar and go, oh, how did that happen? So that was fun because I started playing a lot with sort of the chemistry of the cocktail. So I was changing the structure of it on like molecular levels and doing stuff with foams and smoke and changing the specific gravity. I went down that rabbit hole for quite a while. And then it got to the point where I was going to do, I bought a 1949 and a 1953 flexible bus. That was just a brand name there, but these old public buses that were built like classic cars.
Yeah.
And I was going to do like a cocktail catering thing a few years ago. And then things got a little sideways, and then COVID hit, and then it was a matter of
forget that.
I was throwing good money after bad. So, but in retrospect, you know, my dad, who's doing great now, but he does need some help. So I did move in with him about 12 years ago.
Okay.
And, you know, for me right now, it's hard for me to, even if I wanted to get behind the stick again and travel and do drink lists somewhere, like I kind of, it's a labor of love, but I need to kind of work with my dad, so to speak.
That makes sense.
Sure. So I'm here.
That makes sense.
Don't throw from the channel.
So what was the most interesting night that you ever had? I know you mentioned Roy, and that was interesting and wonderful. But I'm sure that you had some nights there that, and I always remember that when we just talked about the Irish night. I think you guys and Barbacks made like $800 or something that night. It was some ridiculous amount of money.
Yeah, there was a well, there's some nights I just for that I don't want to repeat. But
no, we don't.
I'm just kidding. I'm not really censoring myself. I will say that some of the ones that I remember that, you know, like when you make that sound to a puppy and it tilts his head. I think it was like one show.
Yeah.
I think it was the Swans, maybe. Nina Hagen and... And then I do remember one night, and I think it was... Bad Brains, maybe? And I think I was working security, and some, like, punks, like the full-on Mohawks and the leather-studded jacket, they got up under our roof, under the channel roof, and took off the hood vent for the AC or something. And they climbed down. I think I'd fly with them, and they climbed down and grabbed the big metal girders that went across this, you know, like airplane hangar type of thing.
Yeah.
And they went from like the concession stand on the steel beams of the ceiling just by their hands, just marching across until they got into the pit and they dropped in. And I think one of the managers was like, go get them. I'm going to go into a mosh pit with a jerky channel staff and try to find that guy.
Nope. Sean wouldn't do that even.
No, that's so funny. It's a great
Blue Bart maybe would. He'd probably come out with two or three.
Well, he would, but at the same time, he would get hurt too because them guys were brutal. The stuff that they would do, whatever, the hardcore.
The first time you see a hardcore show in the stage diving and the slam dance, you're probably like, what the hell is going on?
None here?
Yeah, I certainly... you know, I knew what it was, but I didn't breathe it. It was pretty wild. But there was a lot of them. I remember B.B. King. I remember, and I didn't work. I came in to see it. And that's another thing, too. Yeah. Like,
you came in.
You know, how often do you get to walk in to, like, a show like that? I mean, I'm sure if it was sold out, but maybe I snuck in. I don't remember. But I just remember that was another time where I just felt like I was in the presence of greatness and not so humbled as sort of lucky to be there.
Yeah.
You know? Sure. That stuck with me. Roy Orbison one for sure. And then there was also some surreal moments. I remember coming in where it was like an all ages hardcore punk show during the day.
Yep.
But then at night it was like it'd be like some super glam rock band playing. And for a brief moment of time, they were all in the parking lot together, like hyenas and zebras, you know? And I was just waiting for something to happen. But but I think also like that's part of the beauty of it, like the channel, like there was Great Woods and Avalon, and like there were places to see big headline bands. And there was places like Bunratty's where you see local bands that were great, like Titanic's, and but they had a limited size. And this is like this hybrid mythical monster that was the channel. It was like a musical unicorn, you know. It offered all this stuff. So while you had big headliners, you also, you know, smaller bands on a New Music Tuesday, like my band, you can go in and play to like six of our friends, but we're at the channel like playing through Dinky's sound system, you know. It was it's nice that everybody, it could have easily just been just the headliners and sell out and make money, and but like, you know, people that in the industry kind of remembered where they came from and gave it back. And it was, again, that goes to how special that place was, that not everybody did that, you know.
I thought that quite a bit, actually, with the, you know, when Warren especially was on, the very open booking policy, you know. So like you were saying before, you could go to a hardcore show in the matinee, and then, you know, maybe that night, like, Tesla's playing or Warren, or maybe it's Third World or Yellow Man or Slayer. Well,
that's another thing that I was noticing is, like, I remember that, you know, there was, like, Yellow Man, Black Uhura, Toots and the Maytals, like these, and then you'd have like Black Flag, like, and so there was such a variety,
yeah,
because it was amazing. And when you worked there, because if you listen to a certain genre of music, you'd go see your favorite artist or up and coming band in that genre, and maybe branch out a little bit. But when you're working there, every different show has this whole sort of cultural musical identity with the people that come in there, and it's a whole different
100%.
So one minute it's like all, you know, like jam bands and patchouli, and then another night it's
patchouli,
you know, a lot of hairspray and
the big hairspray. Oh, that was dominant at that time with them bands. Oh my!
I was one of them. I was right. I rode that wave for a while.
Nothing wrong with
the
that.
Black eyeliner and the you know, leather pants and the sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
I think, you know, they say youth is wasted on the young. If I knew now what I knew then. Anyway.
That's awesome. It's a good statement though, Domingo. We've talked about that. And, you know, and for me, like, I was working the security and eventually managing and all that. And, you know, to me, it's like a free chance to see all the up and coming bands, you know, and get to, you know, see who was doing what they were doing and who were there just to have a good time and have fun, who were really serious about it. And then, you know, I started booking bands and managing bands and stuff.
So sure, it
really,
is. Cringe Productions.
Like that was fantastic. Yep. It was like a free, I'm getting paid, and it's like a free, you know, free interviews for everybody I wanted to see. And it was cool. Like you said, a lot of us had friends in the business and other friends in bands, and we go see them play at Bunratty's, opening at Bunratty's, and go to the rack for the second or third band, and end up at the channel.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
well, and that's the thing too. It's like if you have like a cool uncle or something that keeps like turning you on to like different records of stuff that you don't listen to.
Yeah.
When you're at the channel, like Bim Scala Bim,
Oh, yeah.
I don't know who that is, you know, or Plate of Fish or Tribe. Fahrenheit. Like, some of the music I'd be like, oh, yeah, well, you know, I like the Beatles and the Stones, and I like kind of pop, and I like rock. But there's other stuff where, like, Roy Orbison, again, I'm going to go back to that, but that wasn't, like, my thing.
Right.
And I saw him, and it just pulled me in.
It was great.
So it was nice to be afforded that opportunity for that kind of musical exposure. That, where else are you going to get it? You know, I mean, unless you go looking for it, actively looking for it, and life is busy enough. So to be able to walk into work and go, all right, tonight I'm listening to reggae, you know?
Right. Absolutely.
Well, with you living so close to the channel, I'm sure you popped in when you weren't working a bunch of times, and to see you now becoming friends in there with people and seeing how everybody's doing things and being you and working with Tony and stuff like that with his art and whatever, I'm saying, oh, that's got to influence Domingo with his art. And I hear now that you're a really talented artist, just like your dad. And with that in mind, you're creating stuff that's in your mind from all those days as being a punk at the channel and stuff.
I did a whole series, not necessarily of performers that were at the channel, but the way that place sort of galvanized my love for music. I ended up doing quite a few paintings of, at first it was like stuff that resonated with me, but I was using a resin on top of the painting. So because I like puns, I did resin and then an eight, and I did eight different portraits of musical icons that had passed.
Yeah.
So I did a Bowie, and I did a Johnny Cash, and anyway, so yeah, it's influenced many things, and in a good way, you know. It's like, yeah. I like it changed a lot of us.
Oh yeah,
it definitely guided. There was sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Let's just be honest about that. So there was definitely some bad decisions made. But the fact that I got to be surrounded with music and like-minded music-loving people,
yeah.
There were the occasional rhubarb ejections.
Rhubarb.
And just disagreements and everything. But, you know, it's hard to go to, you know, a concert where everybody's really digging what they're watching. And, you know.
We were your own family there. It was great. Like you say, when you
walk through. People are pretty much respectful in there. They're, you know, you throw some people out, but that happens everywhere.
Yeah.
Sure. I'm at airports.
Of course.
Yeah. It was it was nice. And then I did make some, you know, close friends. And hell, you tried to, I mean, you were very, very good at managing the band and we were buddies and as well as we could be managed. But I mean, we spent many days in a van and as we lovingly like to say on our international tour, where we went up into Montreal with the rest of the RFR's band. And that's a direct byproduct of being at the channel. And then Jim and Taffy, and sadly they're no longer here. But I mean, I wouldn't have, unless I was going to Berkeley or I was, you know, posting stuff on the back of the Boston Phoenix looking for a guitar player. You know?
Yeah, well, I think nothing cool with the channel was there were so many creatives there, right? Creative people. Yeah. You know, that's kind of a term these days, a creative. You're like, you know, whether you're an artist, you know, Kathy was an artist, you were an artist, there are other people that had other talents besides just like wanting to listen to music or wanting to bounce people out of the club. I mean, there were different, you know, there were guys who wanted to do lights, guys who wanted to do the engineering and back up Dinky and, you know, work the bar or a bar back or just, you know, be a fly in the wall and kind of see what was going on there. You know, maybe you became a manager of bands or an agent, or you became in the band yourself like you did. I mean, it's just...
Yeah. Well, you know, something that's interesting that happened to me a while back, probably a couple of years now, but I remember, I don't know if you remember this guy, Kenny Desmond. Remember him?
Sure.
He worked backstage, right? Big, really, really nice, big black guy.
Yeah.
Right? And he always had a huge law book. Remember?
Really?
When it was downtime, he'd be like looking and the lights would go down and he would do his job. And then, anyway, I was in Dunkin' Donuts at a government center. And I'm trying to find the file. I'm looking at this guy. He's about my age, you know, wearing a bow tie. And I'm like, I want to say, Kenny. I don't think anyone's called him Kenny for a long time. So he's a Supreme Court judge of Massachusetts.
Oh,
amazing.
Yeah. And he's like, oh, my God, Domingo. And I was like, Kim. So, you know. So if I ever get in trouble.
You got a contact now.
But it was so cool that, like you said, you know, maybe you want to do this. Maybe you're working at a channel and you're getting a listen to music. And, you know, on your downtime, you're studying the law books. And now you're a Supreme Court judge.
That's awesome.
Amazing.
It's
incredible.
It's such a light, that channel. It's got all kinds of stuff coming out of that one. Oh, my God. That's a good one. I like that one, sure.
You started off, like I said, you were kind of just security. Like, I think everybody there, pretty much, you start working, it's almost like wearing every hat, right? You're helping out. It's like, hey, you're a bartender. I need you to go do some security for a while. Go pick up some beers or help the bar back or do whatever. You know, help get the band get loaded out. You always had to kind of have that the openness to do that, which is cool. You know, you learn more parts of the business as it was. And again, we're all pretty much a family back then anyway, so it was not a big deal to help someone else, whatever they were dealing with. I know you were, at one point you mentioned a story about how you took over the duties of filling the riders and going to the dressing rooms for the bands. And maybe you could just describe a couple of stories you had doing that, because I think you took over.
I don't know that I did it for long, because I think it was, I don't know if it was part of the bar back duties or it was, because I think when Bobby Longo was doing it, he was like the king of that. And then I think he moved over to more stage management or
production.
Production, yeah. So I do remember doing it, and it wasn't, and just one thing that I remember, and I'm not trying to disparage this man, because he is like a blues legend, and the fact that I was in there, and I also got this idea from Bobby Longo. He said he used to take those white channel golf shirts that we had, the channel staff, and he would have the different acts sign it, so that he would have, like when you were talking about earlier, it'd be nice if we took more photographs. Well, he would collect signatures, and also the shiny backstage channel passes. So I had a shirt that, and I won't mention their name, but one of the lovely ladies that I dated when I worked there, I collected a bunch of Sharpie signatures on the shirt, and it got washed. Anyway, when I was in there, one of the artists was there that was, you know, a living legend, and I'm you know, bringing food.
You can name names. It's okay. It happens.
The performer was John Lee Hooker, but he was so, at that time, he was so old. I mean, the guy was, you know, making records in what, the 40s?
I was for a while.
Right. And he was very kind. He's like, oh, absolutely, young man. I gave him a shirt. I never wore the shirt that I had anyone sign. I just brought it with me. And he was, you know, maybe he was thinking up a new lick or something, or he was having a memory, but he did the John Lee, and he got to the H, and I think he put down like 8 O's before the K kicked in. K-E-R. He just started signing O's and just kept going for a while. And I'm like, all right, well, that's an original.
That's an original.
Well, it got washed, of course.
But, that's a great story.
Also mentioned that, never mind the national, actually, you get to discover, you know, local talents that you might have heard about or not even heard about, and here they are playing the channel. I mean, we talked about some of the people that stood out big time, like, you know, Barron Whitfield, of course, and Tribe.
Well, and also what the Dream, and then the Extreme, and then Extreme. Like, you know, I remember Gary Cherone. We just had like just one sneaker on, and then he would hang upside down from the rafters, and all the
girls,
all the lovely ladies were there, hundreds of them, going crazy for this band. And then it was, you know, Fahrenheit too, and was another one that, oh, well, I mean, sort of a different crowd, but Gangrene.
Well, yeah.
It's wild, right?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
It was wild nights with Gangrene every time. It was fun.
And Tribe was, I just loved her voice. I mean, if we're being honest, she was like one of my first crushes. And she came in, I was like, okay, I like her. Oh, wow. I'm like, do you need any more Coca-Cola? Can I bring your ice one cube at a time? That'd be all right. It'll take me a while.
That's funny.
That's so I like that one.
How about the story? And you mentioned briefly, Domingo, how, and Dickie, this is maybe you remember this or not, but there was a local record label called Arf Arf Records.
Oh, yeah.
It was, They had, you know, like Willie Loco was on the label and Gingerbread Man and. So Eric, who was with the Bird Songs, Mesozoic, was his label, I think, and he put this little tour together that was...
You know, Well Babies, too, I think.
Well Babies, yeah. It was great. And Smack Tan Blue, Domingo's band.
Yep.
So it was, I think, 4 or 5 bands, and just kind of put this little run of dates together, maybe like a half dozen dates, and it went from Boston up to, you know, Toronto and Montreal and Buffalo. We had a great time, but it was like, so now we can call it an international. We were actually international touring artists, right?
We were.
It was totally funny. But tell us about a little bit about the trip, a couple of stories from the trip, maybe if you can, about that with you and the band.
Well, I don't remember everyone's vehicle. I know that you were driving and we were all sort of not strapped in. We were just kind of sitting on the floor of the van. And I don't know if all the bands used the front line or whether like we shared drums. I don't remember any of it. I remember that you did a lot of driving. We did a lot of bumping up and down on those back roads and what have you. But I do remember when we got to Canada, we were going to Montreal to play Buffoon's Electric, which I think means electric butthole. Is that what you told me?
Yes.
And it was a big fun club, and these guys were kind of down. They were down for it for sure. But on the way there, we had to go through customs, and we had a drummer, very nice, jolly, great drummer, young guy from Berkeley, red hair, big rosy cheeks, just a big, but like super stoner. And we're like, Greg, you're not bringing any drugs, right? He's like, no. Kind of goosy kid, right? So we're like, all right. We're like 4 cars away from the Duan, right? The customs guy.
Yep.
Greg? Nope. Okay. And we got, you know, we're like the next car. He's like, all right, hold on. I'm like, you fucker. Really? So he reaches into his sock and he pulls out like this 8-corn-sized ball of hash.
Oh, no.
And he's like, oh, sorry. And I was like, dude, lose it or something and don't eat it. So he rolls in his window and he kind of tucks it nonchalantly onto the grass on the side of the road, whereupon this squirrel comes upon it, and we never saw either of those things again. So the squirrel grabbed his ball of hash and took off up a tree or something. And then the Gingerbread Man, now I think they have a song, so I don't know if they dedicated it to this squirrel that had either the best or the worst night of its life, but they did have a song, and maybe they wrote on tour, I don't know, but Sean did send me the link that they wrote a song called Happy Squirrel. So at least he got memorialized in that way.
Yep. Ash Happy Squirrel in the Montreal border.
Oh, Happy Squirrel. They're waiting for it.
That's so funny.
There's a lot of people like you guys that did that. We never did that. No, we never did that going through borders. You know, it's just like...
It's just cool. These are like the memories that come back. Like we were kind of reminiscing the other night, Domingo and I, and it was like, you know, we just took it for granted. We just, you know, again, we were just kids having fun, and it was like, oh, this is what you're supposed to do. And then on one of those nights, we played in Buffalo, and our show got over, and then we knew, like, the Goo Goo Dolls were playing on the street, and they were, like, from Buffalo, and they were huge. But not like now they're superstars, and they play arenas and whatnot. But back then... They were one of those bands that came and played the channel. They were like a punk rock band. They played they with like the Gangrene and the Voodoo Dolls and bands like Joe, like those local bands. And then they were playing, so we all got in to see the show for free, and they're doing their thing. And it was just like, cool. You know, it's like you make friends with people that we had seen, you know, hours and states away. And, you know, on tour, I was like, yeah, let's go check them out. Cool. You know, and we could walk right in, club courtesy, whatever, and another fun memory. You know, things like that just happened. You just took it for granted back then. You forget about it until something – spurs your memory when you talk about something else, and then that pops up. It's like, oh my God, I forgot all about that.
There's so many. Every night there was something, and it's just remembering every night, sitting there where the channel used to be, and trying to get their memories. Well, I don't have to do that. I just look at the database, and I talk with Sean, and I talk with Tony when he's there, and we remember all kinds of stuff. And they're like, wow, that's wonderful. But with you, we had the group was called Smack Damn Blue. I remember that now completely. Yeah. Oh, my goodness. It was the time. It was the time.
It was all employees from the channel at one point, right?
No, I don't think the drummer, the rhythm section, Kathy for sure, drummer.
Yep.
And then Kathy was a bass player, but the drummer, we always seem to go through Jim, guitar, yes. And then sometimes we got we would get a rhythm guitar.
Okay, yeah.
But I think, for the most part, it was the three of us who sort of started. And then
Tommy Hodges, of course, is your sound guy. He was on the channel first.
Oh, yeah. That's right. Thank you for bringing him up.
Tommy was there too, that's right, he was a sound guy. We lost Tom.
We lost him and Kathy. It's all three. It's just crazy. Yeah. You know, they're not that old.
Tom was great at the channel working and stuff like that. And what he did, I'll always remember. I mean, Brian Washburn and Donna Washburn just couldn't believe what Tom was doing and stuff. And then when they passed, it was like, whoa. Because we lost Timmy Hines, and we lost, and BB's gone, and
I didn't know Timmy.
Timmy Hines, he went quite a few years ago, and so did BB went, as you know, and
that I remember.
And then Scott Pullman's down in Nashville, like I was saying last week, and stuff about Scott. Yeah. Brian. David, I forget his second name.
Bernstein or Burn something? Is it Bernstein?
No, I'll remember.
Bernier, I forget.
But they all gone down to Nashville.
Wasn't
there
a Greg Klassen too? Isn't he working with like a big band now?
He's working with Extreme still. No, not Extreme. He's working with another metal band
Toto.
And stuff. Yeah,
he's in a bunch of different things.
That's actually. He did Toto. Yeah. You're right. He did a bunch of stuff.
Yeah. Weren't there also some twins?
The Chinese stuff. They're still on the road. Yeah.
What are their names?
Tom and Warren. They're still on the road. Working on the brother bands. Okay. Again, my memory, if I try to go that far back, it keeps running down.
But see, now you've permanently sat down with art and doing stuff with your dad and going to Spain and stuff and having a great old time, but at the same time working. I mean, you're working, but you're putting your art, which is creative, and whatever part you just want to do, you guys are coming out with some really neat stuff. And with you being still in the last drags of the, as I call it, of the art community at the Channel area, because most of the people left because the rents got so high in the big... Chris Harding, who was a great photographer down there and stuff like that. They all ended up in Somerville, I think, because the rents there were cheaper. But you were still there, ready for a big change down there again. But I just... Yeah. At one point, we were going to try to put a big tent where the channel was after they'd all gone and do a show or two, but... We did that benefit a few years ago, and Sean and I are thinking about doing a full reunion again, and we got to talk about that and what we can do. And because Tom Hambridge wants to be on it for sure, we talked with him last week, and he's like, "I want to be able to do this, that, and the other from that time, and see all those channel people, because the people that came to the reunion when we did it at the old Bradford Ballroom there, quite a few years ago." Yeah. We're all channel people without it. I mean, they were all wonderful, having a great old time. Yeah.
Was Robin running that?
Yeah, I got Robin to run it because I was.
Yeah, because I went to that.
I thought you were in
Theater District, right? somewhere down
there? Yeah, it was the old Bradford Ballroom. It's called Royale now, I think.
Yeah, okay.
It's a good...
That's in the Wang Center.
It's a good theater. Yep. You know, in respect of the stage was excellent for doing these kinds of shows and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And the surrounding bars and stuff were classy, you know, because it's more of a disco at night and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, people used to play there and what have you until COVID struck. And then after that, it was like everybody saw it going into these new jives and stuff that comes through and what have you. And there's no, I mean, it was, you go in that Bradford Ballroom then, it was amazing. I saw people get married there and stuff and what have you. Larry Wineless and people like that. We had fun in that place after the Channel days. So we would have to look around for some place that's like the Channel that we can have a reunion again and have everybody come. We have to come up for that. I don't know whether you do this, but take photographs with the cell phone and then go back and do your paintings because you've got dynamics from the phone. You can go back.
Take what now?
Take photographs of events like that, and then you can open them up again when you get home and start doing the paintings and whatever, because you start making that. That's live. That's real. That's meant to be. And now you're doing a lot of the stuff that's coming out of your head from that time period. But at the same time, if you capture that on the phone, you now can go and do a masterpiece. Because you've got all the lighting around it and now the
colors. Challenge accepted.
You know, you don't use the phone. You just use it as a guide.
Oh, yeah. I do that a lot. And I started to go down the 3D resin printing rabbit hole now.
Yeah,
too.
There you go.
I'm writing, like, these next couple of days, I'm sort of restructuring my art studio area. If I'm painting, there's paints and easels and stuff everywhere. And then when I start moving to something else, it all gets put away, but easier to just put in a pile somewhere. And then I set up a table and get my yayas out on that. And then, so.
Yeah. I saw this, Main Cabin Masters, one day I could not believe that she went looking. This is the wife of one of the guys. She went looking to across the road when they'd moved into this new area in Manchester. This woman was doing it with wax, and the paintings that she was taking the photographs from the past, and then wax covering them, and they were coming out so dynamic. I was like, that's a whole different ball game than a regular picture. It's a regular painting.
I've been doing the ones that I did recently of Freddie Mercury and Prince, and I put colored paint into like a pastry bag, with a palette knife, I would pick up the palette, so I did these big thick just strokes. It worked, but
that's cool.
It took me a while to figure it out, but I'll shoot those to you sometime. You guys can.
That's really good stuff.
Unfortunately, but
it's fun.
Yeah.
I was going to say, Domingo, do you have any exhibits or any artwork that's anywhere people can go see it now? Or do you have any shows coming up in the near future?
No, I don't have anything coming up until November.
Okay.
So, I've just got my head down working. I'll have a whole bunch of stuff come. There is something that, if this is the time where I plug something. Right across from the channel, obviously we're in Fort Point, and we have Fort Point Open Studios every year in October. So Vinky, to your point, my dad had the foresight 40 years ago with a bunch of people and a sympathetic bank, and I guess on one of his, he was a teacher, so one of his students, I think, had a husband that was a banker, and they each put up $1,000 to secure a loan. So he owns this building.
Oh, excellent, excellent.
So it's a cooperative, so they can't, and they don't, and if somebody leaves, you can't charge market value, so it's always going to be available for artists on the
That's fantastic.
So he can't ever get pushed out. He's been in this studio for 44 years.
That's excellent.
More districts like that, they don't exist anymore, you know.
No, I know, this is, you know, this
so
is
needed, you know?
The last of it. But in October, there's 300 Summer and there's Midway. There's other artist buildings. But every October, Four Point Open Studios, everybody for the most part in all the buildings just opens their studios, lets everybody see their work, purchase their work if they like. You know, we throw out some beer and wine and snacks and
show.
So it's nice. And then we usually have, there's Boston Lyric Operas down the street. And we have some local musicians, so we set stages out outside and we do music and opera.
That's cool. That's like very nice. Yeah. That's nice.
Let me plug that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's wonderful. All right, with that in mind, we're just about time up for us.
This was great.
Excuse me. This was really
happy you could make the time to me. It's great to reconnect.
Definitely.
And I was just thinking, who could have thought where you are right now, all because you went wandering for a pack of smokes.
I love it.
And now I don't smoke, but here I am.
That's awesome. That's great.
Now I'm just on fire.
At least doing creativity, and here you are still doing it.
Definitely. Here you are still doing it, and it's great stuff and great mentality, great, wonderful. All right, Sean. All right, Domingo. This is wonderful.
All right, Dinky. It was. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Right. And Sean, I will chat. And this is real good. This is Two Pints in a Corner closing out.